the NFL podcast. Wants its next contract fully guaranteed.
Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, official sponsor of the NFL. I'm Greg Rosenthal here in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wesseling, and for the first time ever, Omar Ruiz.
Ooh, that's some intense music to be introduced to. Wow, this is awesome.
Oh, we just broke out that music just for you, Omar, like almost 1,000 episodes in, and that music
I feel
just
like I should have walked in with that entrance.
It was made for this moment. Yeah.
Should have been carried in.
Omar Ruiz, of course, a longtime reporter at the NFL Network. He is sitting in the Dan Hansis seat. And, you know, potentially putting himself a little bit at risk here.
The Wally Pipp exchange is...
No. I'm not saying Dan is putting himself at risk. You are, because Dan is out sick today. He's got the little C. You know, of course...
The little C.
Chris had the big C back in the day. And now we have the medium C, I guess, is
what is that standing for? Coronavirus?
The media C.
I mean, he has undetected flu-like symptoms.
Dan has the little C, just a cold. The middle C.
We don't know that.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know that. We don't know what Dan has.
Greg's
not been detected.
I'm not putting that out. What are you guys?
Supposedly, you guys texted him. You haven't heard back yet, right?
There's a lot of missing fill in the blank scenarios here, Wes.
There's some information that my wife would like to have that she has not gotten from Dan yet.
I mean, his kids were sick. He said he had. He said he had strep throat, and that's unfortunate. But Keisha, to her credit, is concerned just in general about the sand, you know, how safe it is up here. Emailed a shadowy league figure about it, and then which ended up going to our producer Ricky Hollywood to wipe down all the microphones in the studio.
Well, yeah, it was under my impression that the janitorial staff that the NFL employs was doing a little bit more than just emptying out the trash in here. So
news alert: they were not.
That's called due diligence by Lakeisha.
Yeah,
due diligence.
Yeah, that. I mean, she's very pregnant. It all checks out.
And Wes's face is like roughly 4.5 feet from Dan's face, like 6-7 hours.
But people need to calm down. Trying to put this on Dan.
And full disclosure, I was just sick, but I went to the doctor yesterday. It's not Corona. It wasn't even the flu. It was some sort of lung inflammation or something.
Nice, a new strain of virus being brought into the virus.
But it's no longer contagious.
With a history of pneumonia and bronchitis.
Right.
Friday show totally up in the air.
It's like I've got a cough, but hey, it's no big deal. Glad you guys had me on the show. Thanks, Omar.
Whoever's in that chair is just coughing constantly.
We've got a fun show. We've got a lot of news. We're going to ask Omar Ruiz, put him in the hot seat. I know.
Yeah,
it
does feel warm.
Mark has one of those automatic time questions.
I think we all do. I mean, our questions, we haven't had a chance to kind of quiz you with things we've always wanted to ask you, and some of them are hotter than other items.
Mark, remember that I believe early 1990s television show Herman's Head?
What?
Oh, that is even.
I vaguely.
It sounds familiar, but I was not a consistent viewer or ever.
I want to know what's inside Omar's head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
We also are going to talk about some underrated, maybe overlooked players, GMs, stories heading into free agency. Jumping off the fact that Omar Ruiz, again, is here. One of the most underrated guys at NFL Network.
Oh, thank you.
And maybe now at some point you don't want to be underrated. It's like you just want everyone to recognize your greatness.
You want to be rated, just.
But I think it's fair to say that Omar is kind of a key figure here at the network. People love Omar. He does a great job, and he's underrated. He can be a little overlooked, not as much anymore.
Sure, because you're extremely versatile, and whether it was the old days and we'd be, cranking out those stories, and you'd be doing what Matt Money and Andrew were doing out the news desk inside.
Right, they can
shoot you out to San Francisco, and you cover the Niners seamlessly. So
on a day's notice, and take a red eye to Cleveland, and be embedded with the Browns for a week. And I think that's one of my strengths is to go from Cleveland to Jacksonville. To 49ers.
No drama, Omar. That's why I have noticed, though, because he's been with the NFL Network since 2012. The assignments, it's like the assignments are going up and up. When you see like who's covering one of the Super Bowl teams, like Omar's getting those plum assignments now. So they're starting to recognize.
Thank you. Oh, so you may not notice this, but during things like the NFL Talent Summit, like you have leadership quality that come across, and not everybody has those. So it's easy to see, and it's appreciated.
Right. We are occasionally pinged by listeners for sometimes we get critiqued for being too nice to our guests that come on the show, so you know there's going to have to be, if we see a little crack chink in the armor, we're going to have to go after it too.
We're gonna hit you hard about your days as a game day security guard. So just be ready for some tough questions. But in the meantime, Ricky, let's do some news.
Jarrell, so your coach, Mike Vrabel, calls you guys his street rats. You guys always find a way to get it done.
That is the voice of Tiffany Blackman. We are just saying so long and farewell to another one of our coworkers we've probably said nice things about over the years. Moving on to the MLS team in Charlotte, she announced today. So just congratulations, Tiffany Blackman, one of the good people here at the network.
One of the great people. Always interacted well with my daughters and family at all the league events. And as a matter of fact, she said that she wanted to come on our next family vacation. So I opened up the invite to her whenever she's ready, Tiffany.
Well, you just came back from one and she didn't take you up on it.
So not that time, yeah. But she was in the middle of going to the MLS Charlotte. So whenever that thing gets up and running and
came
Tiffany,
to Tybee for our wedding.
Mm.
Yeah, she's a good friend of Lakeisha. We've had fun with Tiffany.
She did a lot of covering of those Southeast teams, Charlotte, Atlanta, and Tennessee, where
the Bermuda Triangle, the teams nobody pays attention to outside of the Southern United States.
We're paying attention to the Titans right now. We're leading the news with them. We are talking Tennessee because Ryan Tannehill, to me, could be the first decision that we get a feel of how all these quarterback decisions are going to be made around the league. Ian Rappaport, our insider, reported today that the Titans are focused on re-signing Ryan Tannehill. The tag deadline has been extended to Monday. Just going to combine these two stories. We will find out if the Titans tag Ryan Tannehill by Monday. But in the meantime, they are reportedly focused on re-signing Tannehill. Does this quiet your Tom Brady to the Titans thoughts, Chris Wessling?
Well, Rap Sheet said this is their priority. Their top priority is to bring Ryan Tannehill back. So, yes, that does, by definition, quiet concerns that Tom Brady would be replacing him. And I think as much as we see Tom Brady connected to teams like the Titans and the 49ers, you have to kind of question whether he fits those offenses and what the plays they kind of run. Play action, boot action, movement in the pocket. Does he fit those offenses like the quarterbacks who are already in place in those cities?
I agree with that assessment, especially with Ryan Tannehill wants to be there. The chemistry and the magic that they formulated once he was inserted into the lineup, that's something you can't necessarily replicate, even as great as Tom Brady is. If you were to go there just sort of out of a vacuum or in the vacuum, Ryan Tannehill coming in reminded me a lot of the Case Keenum situation in Minnesota. They thought they could upgrade with Kirk Cousins. Hasn't necessarily worked out that way by getting a guy who seems to be an upgrade. So if they can build on that magic, that chemistry into the 2020 season, then I think
Omar making himself an enemy of kissing Cousins' corner. These guys love Kirk Cousins.
I don't love Kirk Cousins.
Not representative of our feelings on Kirk Cousins.
That's not the case. He's an upgrade from Case Keenum. Let's kind
sure.
of
down.
I would say this for the like a lot of this like, oh, you're a free agent. Everyone wants to match you with new landing spots and teams. And if I'm the Titans and I look at Tannehill, or if I'm Ryan Tannehill, or if I'm looking at Derrick Henry, or I'm Derrick Henry, the best landing spot is right where you were last year, because I just don't simply trust Ryan Tannehill suddenly going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or fill in the blank Team X. The Titans worked with these two guys for a reason. I would hate to see either one of them try to duplicate last year somewhere else. They're both risky somewhere
else. Right, and I know Ian's right that he's their first priority, but to me, what does that mean? Is he their first priority at a certain price? That's how I would assume that it is.
But doesn't priority mean that they want to get it done? What priority means.
Absolutely, they want to get it done. They could get it done if they wanted to just pay him $30 million a year. I'm sure it'd be done today. So it's figuring out what the right price is. And is there a price that's, you know, too much, too rich for their blood where they start going in on Brady? To me, the tag deadline being changed to Monday probably affects the Titans more than any team. The Cowboys are in there too, because I just think they kind of have to declare what they're doing. I would imagine they're going to use their tag on Derrick Henry. And to me, that tells you, Ryan Tannehill, you're our priority, but we at least are comfortable in the uncertainty of what's going to happen Monday and Tuesday, that we have some other plans if we can't get you signed?
I just don't understand. Like, does Tannehill have any leverage to me, like, what
no
other team is going to go after Ryan
no
Tannehill?
No one's attached him to any team. Have you heard anything, Omar?
I haven't heard anything with Tannehill as far as outside teams, but I think you saying Derrick Henry being maybe the focus of that tag speaks to whoever at quarterback of the Titans is next year, it's going to be a run-first team still. Derrick Henry is still going to be, you know, the ball carrier, and he is the reason, and that offense, for what he does to it, is why it's so attractive, whether it's Ryan Tannehill, whether it's Tom Brady, Derrick Henry being the centerpiece of that offense.
Yeah, I think you can't discount the stats Tannehill put up are just outrageous.
I mean, who could use a 117 passer rating?
Right. I mean, it's hard to overlook that.
But, Wes, do you agree that if he just went somewhere else, like a team trying to just find a quarterback
Tampa
to plug
maybe.
In? I like bringing the whole Titans thing back for another year.
While we're on Tampa and Brady, the Tampa Bay Times is reporting just now that the Bucs are all in, quote, on Tom Brady.
Mm. Well, and we just did an NFL Network hit where we talked about teams that are going to be over-celebrated if they do certain things in the offseason. I brought up the Bucs because if you ever put Brady into Tampa Bay and they have their shiny new uniforms and everything else you got going on there, look out for the songs being sung about
the
Bucs.
A nice young defense.
And everyone makes the comparison, Phil Rivers as potentially a landing spot there in Florida with Bruce Arians, the way Arians resurrected a late Carson Palmer career. Imagine what he could do with Tom Brady.
It's a very different fit in terms of the offense that he plays in, but Arians played with Manning, and the only thing I'd push back with you, Wes, on, like, if the Titans took Brady, I think any team that takes Brady, you're running the Tom Brady offense. I mean, you are just choosing.
I think Derrick Henry is the Titans' offense.
Right. No, I get
it. That out.
It'd be a huge risk for the Titans to change things. But wherever Tom Brady goes, you are going to change things and do things in a way that Tom Brady wants to do it, that suits his skill set.
Why would you do that with a 43-year-old quarterback?
Because that's the best way to make him at his best. Why bring him in unless you're going to let him do what he does?
What is his best now?
I think, you know, picking out matchups before the snap.
Right. I mean, what is his best quality? How high is his ceiling right now? Can he lift your offense? Because he did not lift the Patriots' offense.
But wouldn't you say that part of Brady being wooed by another team and the discussions around that are that Brady's involvement and creation of the attack will be immense versus just taking someone else's playbook?
That's all I'm saying. And with the Bucs, I think the upside would be a better-than-average starting NFL quarterback that limits mistakes and can kind of manage the game, for lack of a—I hate that phrase, but that's part of it.
Well, especially with the Buccaneers and those 30 turnovers last year, I think they've emphasized ever since the season ended that this season would have been dramatically different had they prevented those turnovers. So even just limiting those would be a huge victory for the Buccaneers in 2020, regardless.
And it's a very Bruce Arians move.
And then you talk about Tom Brady with Mike Evans and the weapons that they have there. It's a whole different ball game than what he was tempting to have lifted in New England this past season.
That would be fun. It would be a good spot for Stidham Corner to step up and step in. And
of all the impressive things Tom Brady's done in his career, one of the most impressive I've seen is the way people have handled his value this offseason after what he did last year that offense.
I think it's fair, but I think he was a mid-level starting quarterback last year and was about the same when they won the Super Bowl for stretches. And like for the Bucs, for the Titans, that could have a lot of value. No 43-year-old quarterback has ever started a season, so who knows? Maybe it'll be a total bust.
Uncharted territory.
You know who's not continuing his great career, unlike Tom Brady? Marshall Yanda has retired after 13 seasons. Going to be a Ring of Honor guy in Baltimore, they already have said, and could be a Hall of Fame type of guy in 5 years or more. Marshall Yanda, part of those Ravens teams that gave you nightmares. Mark Sessler.
Gave me nightmares?
You don't like the Ratbirds.
No, I'm not. No, I wanted to trade them in for an under-the-continent train system that would go to
Yanda
Island.
Yanda was kind of symbolic of their rugged ways this decade.
Yeah,
I'm
not probably the first person on the planet that should be grading offensive guards as Hall of Fame entries, but I don't know what more you need to do in terms of consistency. He's just been someone you can rely on every single year. They weren't all his best seasons, but Yanda feels like HOF. scenario candidate.
Oh, big time.
To me.
Yeah. I'm surprised he's actually walking away with Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram and everything that they accomplished last year in the running game. It seems like one of those offenses that an offensive lineman would love to perform in. And Marshall Yanda kind of walking away, I think, speaks more to the fact that he wants to be healthy and go out on his terms and maybe...
And how brutal it is to play guard at the level, I think, that he was playing.
He was the easy choice for all decade for my list that I did about a month ago, and I'm sure he'll be on the official one that they come out with, probably with Zach Martin, I would imagine.
I think he'll probably be the favorite. I'm trying to think of who else could be in there. Yanda should get it.
Joel Batonio has been very good,
but
on bad teams and off
probably,
the radar.
Yeah, probably not quite to the level.
And not maybe for the whole decade.
There was a good story someone sent out, was it Kevin Von Valkenburg is his name, yesterday, of covering Yanda as a rookie. Chris McAllister once brought a taser into the locker room, and he put $500 down, and he said, whoever wants to tase themselves gets the $500. And then other players were like, yeah, and, started throwing a ton of money in there, and Yanda just, walked up there. Apparently, he grew up on farms, and he knew that wasn't even, a police-grade taser, that it would be no problem for him, and he just, because he knew enough about tasers, and just did it, and, everyone
lost their minds. I would get tased in 2 seconds for a
pile. And then they were like, did he really do it? And,
he
did it again just to prove him wrong.
He said on the farm they had electrical fences, and he was used to that, so.
Get you a little locker room respect.
We're going to do that on Friday's show. Bring in the taser. I think Ricky would take a taser to the thigh or something. She would go for it.
She would register the taser.
If you can make a little money.
Yeah.
Take that one to the bank, Ricky.
$20 is $20, you know.
Throw it down right here.
$20 is all it takes.
20.
We've been following the Al Michaels, Monday Night Football, Tony Romo, all the speculation of who's going to be announcing where throughout the offseason. It's really Dan's corner. I feel bad even talking about it without him here. I really do.
You know, I feel bad about it. Joe Tessitore and Booger McCoy.
Yeah.
We've
talked about that, too.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate for those two. But, hey, we're just reporting the news. And the latest is Andrew Marchand of the New York Post says the NBC is saying no to an Al Michaels getting traded to ESPN deal. So that solution, which seems fun, I guess will not happen.
It just surprises me because of the Mike Tirico factor, where it was such an easy transition to someone that has been kind of backbenched unnecessarily. In that article, there was one line that stood out to me because they mentioned Kurt Warner as someone in there in the mix if Manning didn't go, but that said, internally, ESPN has toyed with the idea of a booth with Steve Levy, Lewis Riddick, and Brian Griese, who did the second Monday night game a year ago. That's just, if all this stuff falls apart and it looks like it's falling apart, that could be a trio to look at.
They were good. I like Lewis Riddick. I don't love a three-man booth. I just think, I would pick just Lewis Riddick. Just do, you know, it's like, I think if you're asking people to do something they haven't done before and then it's three people, I'm good with a little Levy and Riddick. Sorry, Brian Green.
On our four-person podcast, you know. That is the comment.
Well, we go on forever. Yeah, that's fair.
But I think with Al Michaels, I think he wants to see this NBC Super Bowl in L.A., his hometown, and I think that will be his swan song, and the official baton will have been passed after that. So I think it's probably more his call than anything to turn that trade down.
Yeah, that's true.
Knowing that not this season's Super Bowl, but the following will be on NBC, and he'll have it here in Los Angeles.
What was his ESPN home putting on the table as trade bait?
I don't know.
Like, why would what's the incentive for NBC to even think about
like
this?
Some of that taser cash.
We'll give you 15 minutes of Stephen A. Smith on Football Night in America. Put him next to
Florio.
Yeah, Florio, and that'd be fun. Tirico, things just go crazy.
Did you say Stephen A. Smith?
Yeah,
no.
I'm just trying to think who are their most valuable assets right now. Stephen A. Smith is the meter.
God, no.
Stephen
don't
A,
even
Stephen
put that
A,
out there A. in the world, Greg.
Saw Skip Bayless at
the
mall,
Oscar
by the way.
Did you see that?
Wait, what?
I think Stephen A. Smith was on some sort of Oscar coverage, right? Just try to maximize ABC, ESPN.
Wow.
Trying to get as much, you know, for
he
his
could
buck
do it.
As
he
possible.
Can do it all.
So we need more disingenuousness from TV reporters.
You can talk about kind of like the Stephen A. Smith types of the world, Mark, because you became close friends with Skip Bayless over the weekend.
There's a mall that is being reconstructed, but there's a movie theater still active inside of it. So I went to said mall. I don't want to, you know, name the location. And as I was going up the escalator from the garage, Skip Bayless and a woman, I presume to be someone that he's, again, don't want to say, I assume it's his wife, I'm assuming, was going in the other direction. So did not have a long conversation, actually.
That's Mrs. Bayless.
It was Mrs. Bayless.
B-A-E.
And Mr.
Was it more than a high and by, or did you actually?
No, we didn't. I just, like, it was one of those things as the person was passing by me, I, like, turned my head and realized that was Skip Bayless and, like, texted this crowd.
How about, what were you doing at the mall?
What did you see?
Seeing a movie.
Oh, I missed that part.
Yeah.
What movie?
Will not.
Ben Affleck.
I will. Right? No. It was not. I will not announce what it was.
Why?
Because the last time I mentioned a movie that I went to, which was
doesn't mean you're endorsing
Hustlers,
it.
I believe.
Yeah, it was.
I was
what
I was just
it?
Ripped to shreds.
People loved Hustlers.
Greg, you almost went to a movie by yourself last night. Which one was that?
I was gonna go see. I didn't see it, but I will. Portrait of a Lady on Fire. A wonderful-looking lesbian romantic period piece. I'm looking forward to it. I've heard it's great.
See, that's playing at the theater that I went to, by the way.
There we go.
Is that what you saw?
No, I saw a film called Greed, which I thought was underwhelming.
Okay.
Greed. Who's in it?
Well, you know, I mean, we can...
Okay, we don't need
to bury it.
We can
discuss that
We don't offline. Need to bury it. We don't need to bury it. What else should we talk about here? Let's talk about the new rules proposals. Did you guys look at that? That they're going to voting on at the owners' meetings, which is still scheduled to happen, by the way. The league says the draft remains in place. The owners' meeting, which is about 16 days away from us flying to Florida for... remains in place. They could always change it, of course. But assuming it happens and they go, it was a little shorter list, I noticed, of potential rules changes this year. What jumped out to you, Mark?
I thought the Eagles lobbying for like different onside kick scenarios that would allow a team to go for it on 4th and 15.
Yes.
Stood out.
From the 25-yard line, you could get the ball on your own 25, 4th and 15, in a way to try to keep possession of the ball instead of doing an onside kick. I love this rule.
It too, because the onside kick seems like it's become unmanageable in terms of being a reality at the end of games to flip possession.
I love that rule too, and we saw it in the Pro Bowl. And I remember leading up to the Pro Bowl, Pete Carroll said, "Hey, if we get a chance to use it, we will." And in fact, they did. They scored a late touchdown. They're still within one possession to try to get back in the game. And Pete Carroll goes for it, 4th and 15 from their own 25. And who interrupts the play? Earl Thomas gets the interception for the ultimate bird back at Pete Carroll in that play. But
anything the ultimate burn in the Pro Bowl, though?
No, the bird.
Oh, bird. Yeah. Oh, look at you.
You being
Omar, were you covering the Pro Bowl?
I was at the Pro Bowl.
I mean, you're covering everything.
And that what a surreal day. I mean, just to talk with Kobe Bryant dying, you know, like 5 minutes before, you know, that all happened.
What was that? What was the reaction from the players and everything in terms of your day there? Like,
it was, first I looked at my phone. You think it's not real. I have some buddies at TMZ, texted them. They said it was. So as everybody in the stands is discovering, looking on their phones, you see them distracted, not looking at the introductions anymore. Mm-hmm. That all unfolds. Then I start talking to the players and they all had heard, and in the locker room before, you know, they're describing just the air and the energy being sucked out of them because they were having their locker room speeches, let's go out and do it. And then that word creeps in right at the last minute. I think Pete Carroll gathered the NFC team around and said, you know, let's go do it for Kobe and all that. And players were willing to talk to me during the game on camera. We couldn't air it because ESPN had the rights to the game until they were offline. But the fact that they were so eager to talk and get their feelings out during the game, the actual Pro Bowl, I think, you know, spoke volumes to how they felt about Kobe, and their words did that as well.
I'd want to know how it affected their on-field performance. I don't know if the Pro Bowl is the perfect gauge of how it affected their on-field performance versus, you know, prior to the AFC Championship or something.
I do like they got to try out that rule, because that we haven't seen a rule change like that in football that I can think of that's that creative and just changing the dynamics of how you think about possession in a long, long time. Like, why not try that out for a year? Wes seems a little skeptical.
No,
Oh, you like it.
I love any rule changes that do not involve replay review.
Okay, well, so there are some replay review changes. One proposal was saying to include scoring plays and turnovers that were negated by a penalty. Basically, just make it more available for automatic replay review so that you don't have to waste the challenge if, like, a touchdown is taken away from penalty. I'd be fine with that, or a successful or unsuccessful attempt. We don't know for sure if they're bringing back replay at all. And they, you know, the Ravens and the Chargers both wanted to add the booth umpire as an official eighth game official, and then maybe add technology advisor. And there's a lot going on here.
Here's one that got on my radar.
Yes.
I don't know if the Eagles are just trying to, as they say, sort of punk the rest of the league and all of us discussing this, but the Eagles want to restore the preseason overtime period to 15 minutes.
What?
Well, and the regular season, too.
Yeah, regular season.
Oh, I just saw – okay, so that helps. I saw preseason, and I thought, why on God's green earth are we trying to extend preseason games that go into a fifth frame?
It is an interesting move by the Eagles. Like, we're into the, we've done this overtime for a while, and now they're just saying, let's go back.
Well, I agree with it.
Regular
like
season,
that.
I kind of get a little bit.
I don't. I like the 10-minute thing.
I don't like the 10-minute, you know, because I think you get the one possession. If it takes 6 minutes, now you have the other possession.
That's fine.
And then that's it.
That's fine.
But, you know, if nobody scores in that first possession, nobody scores in that second possession, there's not really enough to get a third possession to actually win the game. And then you have, you know, all these coaches asked, you know, are you trying to win? Are you not trying to win? Or are you just trying to play for the tie?
But you have other ones where they like have like five possessions each and no one scores. And it's like,
it seems like it's largely been it's worked out without a lot of controversy.
70 minutes is too, that's too long to be playing football. Yeah. You know?
What's 75?
Says the guy on the sideline. Finally, the Patriots lead the way. I don't know if we have to talk too much about this. With compensatory picks, they had four of them, including they were the only team with two third-round picks in compensatory announcements. Trent Brown, I believe, was one of the ones they picked up for.
The Ravens have traditionally kicked everyone's butt in compensatory picks because they figured out the formula a long time ago, and they have said it's like they guard that secret like it's Coke's formula, but it factors in salary, playing time, postseason honors, and whether the team has lost more free agents than they've signed.
Right. And mostly in terms of like the ledger of who you sign, who you don't, that kind of decides how many picks, and then how well they played or how much they did decides where the picks are. And the Patriots are, like the Ravens are a team, I think the Patriots have the second or third most, you know, ever, and the Ravens
Packers
first.
Have second.
And the Patriots, they wait until the day after they're no longer included in the formula, and then they sign some free agents.
It's because I always thought, oh, it just seems like the Ravens constantly have, like, endless, you know, high third, fourth Brown comp picks, which is, you know, as a Browns fan, utterly, because you look at some of these comp picks, Dak Prescott came through a comp pick, Mike Daniels, Kyle Juszczyk, guys like Aaron Jones, James Conner, our guy Burgo, Jeremy Bergman, put together a top 10, like, players that were pulled through comp picks, and there's a pretty amazing list. The Ravens since 2011 have had 20. Since 2011, the Packers, I think, were next with 17. New England, 10. But then you look at teams like the Bears and Jags, they've had one each since 2011, which tells me you're
20,
not...
That's 20 players.
That's right.
I saw a different list that went back even further, and I think the Ravens had 53 and the Saints were at the bottom with 10. I mean, that's 40 players they got an extra swing at.
They signed Mark Ingram and Earl Thomas and still got a third and a fourth rounder compensatory picks. That's how good the Ravens are at this equation.
Yeah, 52 since 94. But that also speaks...
It's huge for the Patriots. They need some young players. And those are two kind of late, very late third round picks.
Does that speak a lot to developing and drafting and letting the guys walk? It's kind of the system.
It's almost like you have too much talent. Like, you have to let guys go. And they're good players. Yeah, they're good. I mean, what are you saying? What's the sell for the Bears and the Jags to have one? You've not done that.
You've not done a good job. You know who has done a good job? Omar Ruiz. We're into Omar. Ask Omar section.
All right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean,
that's it for the news. I mean, he's been here since 2012. His bio, I don't know if this is a La Raville Magnifico, But it's rather long, Omar. And we know you probably wrote that yourself. I mean, that thing is, it's about 400 words.
Well, they asked me, like, when I first got here, that didn't go up until 2018. I've been here since 2012. I had written, like, four before, and it just never got on the website for whatever reason. And maybe they had, quick plans with me early on. But if I was going to take the time, you know, when I wrote that, I was on jury duty. So I was bored in the main room.
Perfect time to dig into a project.
So I just, started banging away at this bio and, a couple drafts later, there it is.
You've hosted NHL Tonight on NHL Network.
Remember?
You've been a play-by-play announcer for some Olympic sports, including UCLA's men's water polo. You made your way through the ranks covering a number of sports, and now you're here mostly as kind of a team reporter traveling the land.
Going all over the country, and like I said, I think the value that I bring is, they can kind of put me in anywhere and, do a...
And so that's all been easy and good, but now comes the hard time. We have 5 minutes. Who knows if we'll actually
go past
it. Oh,
he's actually having a clock.
We have a clock.
Oh, yeah, rapid fire.
I don't know if we have anything. We are going to start the clock, and then questions are coming at you fast. You got to answer them fast, and who knows? This might be...
It's supposed to be a... I'm looking for some depth here.
Okay, well, depth and speed. Whatever. There's no rules on this podcast, and we are going to start right now.
People in L.A. keep score. More than any other city I've ever been around. Houses, cars, neighborhood, airtime, agents, social media following. My scorecard is happiness. That's the only thing on there, happiness. And you rank very high on my scorecard. Your children are some of the most delightful children I've ever seen. They're almost like mini adults.
They are.
And I've noticed that you and your wife don't speak to them like children. You speak to them as if they're actual adults, and you reason with them and you logic with them. Tell me the secret to how great your children are.
Well, I think from an early age, I adopted that philosophy. And so when we spoke to them, even when the kids were 1 year old, a year and a half, and not necessarily engaging in this conversation yet, we would speak to them at the mall in a way that they could understand and hear all of our words, and they could listen to all of that in a way that, and I removed any embarrassment that I would feel talking like that in public. And so then
Wes is taking notes here. A father to be.
I think they absorbed all of that a lot better and maybe a lot faster than their peers were. You kind of just, quiet them up at the store. You don't want them to make a scene. Well, we just sort of encouraged them to be themselves. We were ourselves, albeit in a loud version, and kind of talking like this again, so they could understand better and maybe develop their vocabulary and speaking skills.
They are delightful.
Good dad sesh right there.
No, thanks.
I've got one for you.
I like this music, by the way, Ricky.
You seem like a class act from what I'm hearing here. But what percentage? And I want a number here. What percentage of NFL wags, aka wives and girlfriends, should trust their NFL playing husbands? I want a number between 0 and 100.
65, two-thirds.
Fair number. Seems about right.
Most of the guys in the NFL are good dudes.
I know that you're a good dude, so you're not going to tell us who the 35% are. You're just saying you know things. So
65. Tell us something you saw as a security guard at Candlestick Park.
Well, my favorite memory is Joe Montana retirement night. They're retiring his jersey, number 16. Huey Lewis is singing the national anthem. It's the Broncos. It's the 49ers. They're both, right around the top seeds in 1997 in the AFC and NFC, respectively. The Broncos would go on to win the Super Bowl that year. And I'm the guy that is escorting the cameras as Joe Montana is walking onto the field. So I'm making sure that they keep moving because they're walking backwards, of course, as we're going onto the field at Candlestick, and making sure they don't trip on themselves, they don't trip on the cables and everything. And just to have that kind of bird's eye view as Joe Montana walks on the field to get his jersey retired. It was also the game where it was Brent Jones's final game as a 49er there at Candlestick.
Got to get out of there if Montana's getting out of there.
And it was also the game that Jerry Rice returned. If you remember at that season, week one, Warren Sapp tackles him on that reverse and, tears his ACL. It was his first game back. It was Monday Night Football, so it was everything. Back when Al Michaels was a Monday Night Football.
Take the career path you took.
Yeah, not necessarily that night, but just being there on the sideline, talking to different people. I would, chat up, Jim Mora at the time when younger Jim Mora was on the 49ers staff, and he was not coaching that particular year, and having a discussion on, team building and all that, you know, just random stuff like that that was just so cool, I thought. And, you know, how cool would it be to be on the sidelines and get paid for it? Mm. So I kind of honed in
I
my
like
focus.
It.
Choose your idiom for the English language. Better phrase, beyond the pale or various stages of undress.
Beyond the pale? I would say.
Beyond the pale? Oh, okay.
You're choosing that.
Okay. I mean, either is not my wheelhouse,
gotcha.
But for the sake of this show and keeping it moving,
right.
I'll say that.
Maybe I'm the only one who finds those phrases interesting.
No, those are great phrases. I love them.
Why did you, the last time I saw you in person, I believe, was at around 4-something in the morning at a Waffle House.
Whoa.
You came with us and you ordered a very healthy, balanced meal, and then suddenly you were gone. What happened to you? That was a great chapter of the night.
You weren't teaching your daughter's life lessons at 4:50, were you?
I always say I have the advantage coming from the West Coast of going to Indianapolis and hanging with everybody and having these great conversations late into the night. Because our body is 3 hours ahead. So anyway, I wanted to hang out with Mark and Colleen and one of the coaching friends that we had met, and Dan was there as well. And I was so hungry. You know, I'm a Catholic. It was the day after Ash Wednesday, so I had fasted all day Wednesday.
Ooh.
And I was so looking forward to, once the clock struck midnight, having that huge meal late night, early Thursday morning. So technically I was off the hook, and now I could eat whatever I want. Steak and Shake was freaking closed, so we had to drive out seemingly to Iowa to go to Waffle
House.
Ages
away, I know.
And we get there, and I just put the cook up against the clock. I said, hey, I have a 6:15 flight. It is 4:15. Here is my order. If it's ready, I'll eat it. If it's not, I'm gone. It wasn't ready. I took off.
You left.
And I made my flight. That was the priority.
The coach we were with, by the way, offered some explosive information that cannot be shared on the show.
After I left?
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Do you have any good insidery stuff you want to let out from Indianapolis?
I did have a good conversation with Fred Kitchens. And, you know, after, you know, he really hasn't gone public, you know, with his side of the story since he got fired. And I think the main takeaway from that conversation was he felt he wasn't necessarily supported by ownership to implement a lot of the discipline that he wanted to instill. We saw glimpses of that when they had Hard Knocks. And remember, he was one of the vocal proponents of instilling a little more discipline, trying to make that team tougher. He tried to do some things that he felt he was overruled by ownership. He thought that he had a good conversation with Jimmy Haslam going into week 17, that he was going to have a chance to build on things that they had gotten done there in 2019, as disappointing as it was. And the bottom line that he took away from that was they've been there since 2012, talking about ownership, and they've had 21 wins, and he had a big hand in 13 of them. So as disappointing as that year was, as much of a lack of a support that he felt he had in that situation, they won a lot of games, a lot more than they had.
He's now on a text thread with like 15 other Browns coaches that feel just the same way that he does. So, you know.
I can imagine.
Best California beach for volleyball.
Ooh.
Well, Manhattan Beach is the...
You're a beach volleyball player.
Avidly so. That's kind of my one hobby that I have carte blanche to...
How's the beach bod looking?
Not right now. It's more of a dad bod, you know? But it's funny because I work all off season. Inevitably, I gain 15 to 20 pounds every season. Just being on the road, eating out all the time, lack of exercise, especially as the year wears on, because I get tired come week 9, week 10, just kind of like we all do.
Oh, yeah.
But being on the road, it's Thanksgiving, and then 2 weeks after that, it's my birthday, and then it's Christmas, and then it's New Year's, and then it's the playoffs, Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, whatever, that whole drive. So I gain all that weight, and then I work all off season to take it off, and I do, and then it's...
So it's called the Mangini cycle.
And then you get back in this training camp, and then away we go. So I get into the best shape of my life every year. So whenever you guys have all those tropes, and you guys have that fun discussion about, like, best shape of my life that we hear from the players, I'm saying the same thing.
Well, this podcast right now has something called hashtag BodQuest, which Dan was a large part of. He's been felled at the moment, but he is looking to improve his body, as are the rest of us. You're welcome to join.
Oh, thank you. I will.
Hashtag BodQuest. So anything that you do, hashtag it, and we let you know, people come out of the woodwork and see where you're at.
All right. So. I'm down for that.
And that's it. You're off the scene.
I survived.
I don't know.
Great job.
It was really not that.
That was fun.
I did want to find out, you know, how you elbow out other people for these good assignments. I feel like of all the reporters, Omar is kind of the one who's really just stabbing people in the back, you know.
Maybe it's the nice guy persona that
I only can say that cuz you're the last person anyone ever
I always wanted to be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Mm. I think I probably even auditioned having that music, you know, and those questions. I felt, you know, maybe as close as I could get to Regis.
Minus the prize money.
Minus the prize money.
So. Yeah, you don't get anything. You can be on the next segment, though. I mean, that's like your prize.
There you go.
You can join us as we discuss. I feel like we've discussed it all with free agency. We're waiting for this clock to just turn on. And it's been an extra week this year in terms of the buildup to free agency. Plus, everything's been on hold because of the CBA. I think stuff like things are going to get crazy starting Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are going to be the busiest days of the offseason. We'll have podcasts. We have a web show that'll be on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday next week, too. We'll give you info on that. But we've talked about almost everyone, it feels like. But what are some people maybe we haven't? Just like underrated, overlooked, Ruizian type figures entering free agency. It could be players. It could be GMs, people that haven't gotten a lot of attention that could be factors.
Well, I would say, from the GM standpoint, I want to see how Dave Caldwell navigates that salary cap, hell that they seem to be in right now, given the fact that he has autonomy once again. With Coach Coughlin gone and kind of everything that he loomed in that organization.
So, hasn't gone that well when he did have autonomy.
And he's still around. And I think that's the sort of point to it. This is, I'm sure, his last chance to kind of resurrect whatever hope he might have down the road.
I don't know. I'm never sure. He's stuck around here. They've had one season over six wins while he's been there, and he's still there.
Still there, yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, seeing how he navigates this, you know, will be interesting.
Jaguars are interesting in general. Like, what are they going to do? Because they cannot rebuild. It's not like they're rebuilding, but they're going to be very active.
Mm-hmm. And then I think from a player's perspective, I want to see, like, Blake Martinez, Joe Schobert, how the middle linebackers do this time around. Because remember, there was a couple years where it seemed like the linebacker position was getting devalued, and then C.J. Mosley comes along last year and kind of resets the market, and then Bobby Wagner surpasses that even. Will that have a trickle-down effect? I don't think any of those guys this year are as good as those guys, but how does the market conform to the numbers that were set last year? You know, are they beneficiaries of that being in that maybe second tier? And Martinez was second only to Bobby Wagner in tackles this year, so I think he kind of emerged there in Green Bay, and Schobert's been a playmaker, you know, for a number of years.
It gave me pause. The Browns did not show any interest in re-signing Schobert at what apparently his request is.
I don't know if there's any middle linebacker out there that's going to get paid big money. I don't think those two guys will. We talked about Christian Kirksey, who's maybe a little bit more of an off-ball guy.
Nick Kwiatkowski.
We put Kirksey at the very bottom of our top 101. We did not put Rashad Jones on our top 101, who was cut by the Dolphins.
A 32-year-old box safety?
Right.
Nah.
He's had a great career, but he's not going to make it. Jonathan Joseph also learned today he'll hit free agency. But there's a lot of depth, but not a lot of big names at middle linebacker. Who do you got for an underrated, Wes?
We've been trained over the last, I think, half decade or so to devalue nose tackles in today's NFL. And I think Javon Hargrave and DJ Reader are going to get paid. I think Hargrave is a guy especially who came into the league as a guy like the quintessential anchor guy. You're not moving him. And over the last couple of years, he's developed into a pass rusher too. And Mike Tomlin will tell you, do not think this guy is a one-dimensional run stuffer. He's getting after quarterbacks. And I think Hargrave is a guy who's going to get a lot of interest.
I like Reader.
Reader too. It seems like he might already be headed to the Broncos.
That was my first thing. Hargrave Reader. I mean, we just like those big uglies up front. We're real.
Well, Reader's a guy too who was a run stuffer, and he's gotten better at pass rushing, and he has J.J. Watt's endorsement as the best nose guard in the league.
Hargrave was awesome last year. You can put him on a two-man line or a three-man line. I will not forget his run in the playoffs when they made the AFC Championship and got blown out against the Patriots. He was their best defensive lineman. Granted, it's a small sample. At the end of that season, there were some injuries there. He also gave the Patriots all sorts of problems in that game. Didn't matter. You know, your nose tackle's only going to do so much when your secondary's letting people wide open. But he, on a pretty talented defense, Javon Hargrave was the guy who was kind of standing out the most. And then he really built on it. His best season was a year ago. It's really an awesome.
Where are those guys on your 101 list?
They are right around 30. Hargrave is 30, and DJ Reader is 28. In hindsight, I wish I put Hargrave even a little higher than that.
I had him high.
I think Wes had him higher. I might have made that mistake, but I like them both. Reader a little bit more of just like a run stuffer, but he can rush the passer too. There's a million good defensive linemen. It's like the only position where there's a lot of good players.
Well, you could say Robert Quinn and Jason Pierre-Paul qualify for this if we're talking about what they did last year.
Yeah.
And the way they looked compared to 2 or 3 years ago, they both looked quicker, more explosive. Quinn was getting to the backfield all the time, and JPP was getting multiple quarterback hits every game.
I'd throw in Everson Griffin if he actually becomes a free agent. The Vikings seem confident that they'll be able to re-sign him, but he is a free agent, and he's another guy. I don't know what it is. I guess it's just all athletes age better than they used to, but especially it seems like some of the linemen used to fall apart there in terms of their bodies a little faster, but now you're seeing a lot of left tackles playing until their late
30s. Yeah, that's true.
And you're seeing these pass rushers who are 32, 33 years old. And like Everson Griffin got it done last year.
Well, we don't have the league where like the guy in the middle of the defensive line weighs 380 pounds and has like 5 beer bellies. I mean, these guys are just, right, they're like, they're treating their body.
No one's working as like an accountant in the off season or like
no
actual Green Bay Packer.
I'll give you one that I want to see it before I believe it. But you mentioned for the last decade or whatever, we've done X, Y, and Z. I've completely looked beyond this front office year after year in free agency because their mantra is essentially go into deep slumber whenever players are available on the open market. We'll do nothing but just build our own roster, blah, blah, blah. I think that the Bengals, you hear whispers this time around with Duke Tobin, but Mike Brown has to sign off on all this, and he's been the issue, I think, in terms of growing your roster the way that 98% of the rest of the league does. If it's true that they're going to be active for the first time and you're going to have Joe Burrow at quarterback, the Bengals, to me, you know, they've got cap room. They are an interesting team going into next season, but the first step is a front office that we just assume will do nothing, doing the opposite for once. And that doesn't mean go sign one left guard. They have issues on their offensive line. They have to be aggressive like some of these other teams. They have issues in other places too.
These linebackers we mentioned, the Bengals are a team that is desperately in need of linebackers. Mm-hmm.
That would be fast. I would love to see it. I'd love to see a competitive Bengals team.
Not to mention the Browns. So
it reminds me of an overlooked, underrated story, which came up this week in my own household, in terms of my children asking. They were asking for the origins of different team names. I don't know why it came up, but I was like explaining some team name, why they were named that. And then they started, my Walker kept asking, why are teams named certain things? And they asked about the Browns. And I tried to explain it to him. And I just thought, you know, it's a little underrated that people just don't talk about that the freaking Browns are named after the Bengals owner.
Well,
I mean, like, your whole life is you're the owner of the Browns, and it's the Bengals owner. I mean, that just seems so
terrible.
You could
argue that ex-Browns owner Art Modell created half of the AFC North because what he did with Paul Brown created the Bengals, and then what
Absolutely.
He did with the Ravens created the Ravens.
Yeah, literally.
So that's half. But there is another anecdote out there that the Browns' name is not, it married well with Paul Brown, but that it was a fan contest where someone essentially called them, it was named after Joe Lewis, the Brown
Right.
Bomber,
I looked
boxer.
Into this. This is what Paul Brown said for most of his life. But then later,
maybe he's deflecting.
Later in life, he admitted multiple times. I had to look it up because I wanted to give Walker, my son, the straight truth.
A couple of Paul Brown biographies. They're named after Paul Brown.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He admitted later in life. Yeah, it's after me.
Well, I think it's cool that Jim Brown, arguably the greatest player in NFL history, named Brown, played for the Browns.
I mean, that seems like
Orlando Brown.
Symmetry. If you're going to have a cursed
taken out
franchise,
by a ref,
though, you're going to have that you're named after a guy who owns one of your rivals. Now, in fairness, the Bengals have been, you know, as cursed or worse. So maybe something with that family.
The state of Ohio needs to finally have a football team worth the state of Ohio.
You've got the Hall of Fame there. We're not doing it justice.
What else we got for underrated, overlooked characters in free agency?
I was going to say the women of NFL Network.
Whoa.
Oh.
We have
like this.
Some dynamic, exceptional women. You know, familiar with Ricky, of course, and Colleen Wolf from this podcast. But Jane Slater has broke more Cowboys stories than anybody else I've seen from this network who worked on the Cowboys beat before that. Stacy Dales is phenomenal and one of the great college basketball players we've ever seen.
An like, Olympian.
When I talk about like what we see at the talent summits, like I'm so impressed by the women in this company that they are go-getters, they're confident, and they get things done.
Hey, every day is International Women's Day for Wes here. This is great.
Well, I worked with Jane at the Pro Bowl, and just to kind of see her work on a daily basis and her connectivity with the Cowboys, it was a surreal experience, how dialed in she is and kind of what kind of juice she has there in Dallas. She really is the kind of queen of that
good crew,
Dallas
good crew.
Cowboys coverage, yeah. So
I'm going to go a couple overlooked position groups quickly. Safety, a lot of safeties, not just Justin Simmons. Von Bell, Anthony Harris, Devin McCourty, HaHa Clinton Dix is – pretty solid player. Rodney McLeod, like you go up and a Carl Joseph is out there. If you need a safety, there's actually a decent amount available. And then running backs, it's not a deep class of running back, but I just feel like no one even talks about running backs anymore. And to me, Melvin Gordon would be a nice addition to a team at the right price. Like if the Bills added Melvin Gordon to Devin Singletary,
I like that.
And that's a 1-2 combo. Like I was trying to think, what are the Bills going to do? Because I think they're going to do something. I think they're going to want to add a running back. Kenyon Drake is out there too and is interesting. The Texans are a team that are probably looking for a running back. But Gordon's a good play. When he's rolling, especially if you have someone with him, I think he'd be a good
play. I think last year also probably to an overextended degree gives you a bad taste when it comes to Melvin Gordon.
Yeah.
It was the holdout. He comes back and then the whole offense is not as effective with him in there, but you forget when he's good, he's been awesome. I would say with Kenyon Drake, Steve Keim and the Cardinals too, because you're in year two of Cliff Kingsbury, and they don't have a ton of cap room, but they have enough to get closer to completing the offensive roster that Kingsbury would want. I think at wide receiver, we mentioned this on our last show, that there are, you know, you're rolling out four wideout sets snap after snap, but you don't have four proven wideouts, and you're going to hit it in the draft, but you're also going to hit it in free agency. So I think they're going to be active because they can't float into next September with an unfinished offense the way they did last time.
And I think, speaking about the Cardinals, that they're one of those sneaky teams that there's buzz going about them as being a destination, you know, that people, that players want to be at. And I think Kyler Murray's presence obviously speaks volumes of that, and Cliff Kingsbury implementing the system in year two and what potential takeoff that could have.
These guys talk to each other, all these players, so that matters.
Maybe like the heat there could just help wipe out the coronavirus. You know what I mean? It's just like it's so hot there that would be not a place.
It's a side benefit.
Don't check the science on this. Anyone want to throw one else out as we wrap this up here? We good? Anyone you want to get out there?
I feel good.
I thought Marquette was just like...
I have others, but I think we've discussed some of these. I had the Bills and the Bucks as guys that, you know, but it sounds like the Bucks are no longer underrated. They're becoming centerpiece potentially if this Brady stuff happens.
Well, I like the Seahawks. You know, we talked a little bit about Russell Wilson expressing himself that they need more superstars on that roster, and if they acquiesce...
How about your goatee?
My goatee, I think that's been one of the storylines of the offseason. Got a lot of positive feedback in Indianapolis, so I kept it. And my wife loves it, so it's kind of win-win all the way around.
You've not had a goatee at any point in the last...
Because it just looks natural on you. Some men, they put on the facial hair, and it's just like,
that's
always...
Yeah, I feel like I've seen you with this.
I've had it. I wore it to Indy last year, but I didn't go on TV with it.
Okay.
So essentially, it lasts post-Super Bowl. We go on the family vacation. I shave it down once, and I keep it maybe for a few days. But this has lasted.
Now the public
is this is two or three shaves in now. It's filled in quite nicely.
Wow, it looks great.
And I keep saying when we hit free agency frenzy next week, it's going to be gone. But
I think keep it.
You're such
a nice guy. But it gives you a little, it gives you a little bit of menace, which I don't think
a little sort of
you got the dad, you know, you're not
ahoy, matey.
Yeah, you said you're not in peak beach volleyball shape, so this kind of gives you a little more menace.
Yeah, this is a Lakeisha theory. Some men need facial hair for seasoning and flavor. You're not one of those men, but it works naturally on you. I've been told that I need it for seasoning. And
oh, wow.
What other men does she need facial hair on, just if she's going across the
She was my first and biggest supporter of my beard when I had it. So, I did appreciate it.
Maybe you fall into that category, too.
You guys have a lot in common. Wes is expecting his first in May. Omar, just days away in terms of expectation, your third daughter.
Days away from his due date.
Yeah, in terms of due date. So who knows? Might land on the same day. Your third child, Mark and I, still sitting on two. I don't think we're moving off that.
Yeah, there's not a huge push in our household to expand the roster.
All right. Well, I mean, so. Omar.
The factory had been closed in my household, and then it was opened up.
I'm happy for you. A third, go keep going.
Yeah, right. Before this goes any more off the rails, Omar, if Dan was here, he would say that you said it all. You did it all.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks. And hey, it was awesome to be here. You know, I've been big fans of you guys for
a number of years.
And, you know, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was fun.
It was great having Omar. We will be back on Friday. And who knows what we're going to come up with. We're running
out. The taser special.
Maybe. Yeah, the taser special.
$20.
Maybe some news
Ricky will
be
happening.
Yeah, Ricky's getting the taser on Friday. We'll see if Dan's back.
Tase me, bro.
I guess he's got the little C. Be careful.
I'm not sure how little it is. We'll
be careful out there, everyone, in terms of the middle C. And everyone with the big C, we're thinking of you. You know, fight on. We've got all our C's covered. Next week's going to be big. So until then. Thank you for listening to the Around the NFL podcast presented by Intuit QuickBooks, official sponsor of the NFL. What a time. Weird time in this world right now. Very weird. For Mark Sessler, Chris Wesley, Omar Ruiz, and Ricky Hollywood. See you Friday.